Thank you all, and good morning. Good afternoon, actually. Today, we are pleased to welcome Bill Thomas from HSBC. As Ethan has stated, he is the Global Head of Sustainability for Technology and Services. Bill has worked in information and communication technology for 40 years and was a member of the first HSBC Climate Champion team trained at the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center in Chesapeake, Maryland. He is also listed on Computerworld's Top 100 IT Executives for 2003 and is a board member of the St. Mary's College School of Economics and Business Administration in California. Today, he will be sharing with us what HSBC has done and continues to do in learning to lead their corporate environment in sustainability. So for the next 15 minutes, he will be sharing their achievements and their continued efforts that they are making in the area of sustainability. With that, I ask you to give your full attention to Bill and help me in welcoming him to our call. Bill.
Well, thank you. I guess it might be good if I give you just a little bit of background after what Nancy said. My whole life and background has been IT, you know, since I was in high school, and I'm 63 years old now, so, you know, quite a long time. And I'm a typical American, right? You know, I got a big carbon footprint. So back in 2007, HSBC started a program, and they've been doing these sort of things for quite a long time, long before I got there. But there was a program that they started with Earthwatch called the HSBC Climate Partnership. And that was a five-year, $100 million investment, and the idea was to train 2,200 what they call climate champions around HSBC. And at the time, we had 340,000 employees, I think in 87 countries. On what climate change, what's going on in the climate, and you know, to bring that back to the business. I was asked to go on the pilot program of that because I was a climate skeptic. Yep, I believed that the climate was changing. You kind of have to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to see that. But I didn't think it was my fault. And so they thought, oh, I'm a bit vocal in the company, and they said, you know, let's send Bill, right, and see what happens. I thought, why not? 2 weeks away in the woods in Chesapeake Bay, Maryland, which was one of the five climate centers we set up for this training, and I don't have to take vacation, and, you know, why not? Be careful what you ask for. After going through that program and talking directly to scientists, it was clear to me that humans were causing, you know, the problems on the planet with the change in the environment. You know, continuing to burn fossil fuels and putting CO2 into the environment was causing a problem, and it was getting worse. And so I'm one of those people that decide either I'm going to do something about it or I'm going to ignore it. And so I decided that I had to do something. So I went back to the business. Sustainability around footprint management was not very mature at HSBC, and so there wasn't anybody we could talk to about, well, how do you do anything? So we just started doing, and we started learning. And now in hindsight, I look back and laugh about how dumb we were back then. But it was a start. And we did that for about a year in the business, you know, doing various projects and activities, trying to make ourselves more efficient. And then about a year after I'd come back from the training, a new job in London was opened up for HSBC Technology and Services, basically is the factory arm of HSBC, and we're responsible for its entire footprint. We own all of the corporate real estate, so we have probably close to 10,000 buildings. We own all of IT, all of the company's purchasing, and all of our back shop operation. We account for about nearly half of the company's employees now, of about 250,000 employees. So after 6 months interviewing, I got that job. That was the good news. The bad news was my boss's boss looked at me and said, what's the plan? And I went, how the hell do I know? I just got this job. And we had no idea. And so we started that journey. But that's how I got into sustainability, and most of the people I talk to aren't sustainability professionals. It's interesting that you are, or some of you are, taking a class on sustainability. I'm halfway through my master's program at Ashridge University in the UK on sustainability, and I find it very interesting. So that's kind of how I got there. And so I took over as the head of sustainability, and we began our journey of trying to make the company more efficient. I guess the very first part about this thing is to tell you what we at HSBC mean by sustainability, because I find that word to be very abused right now. And if somebody says they work in sustainability, you need to ask them, what are they doing? Because it really doesn't have much meaning. You've got to get underneath. Our definition of sustainability is being in business for another 150 years. That's it. I mean, it's not an environmental definition, although I'll read one to you that further defines that. You can't help anybody if you're not in business. So for us, sustainability is kind of the convergence between economics, which is staying in business and earning money, the environment, and taking care of the place we live. And that's always been at the forefront of HSBC's thinking, long before it was sexy to be, you know, either green or environmentally conscious. And then the social part of that. So those three intersections is what we call sustainability, and I'll talk later a little bit about that. So we look at sustainability at HSBC in three key areas. One is our risk and revenue area, which I work with those people closely, but they don't work for me, but we're very linked together. On the other side, it's our philanthropic work that we do, like the program I mentioned around the HSBC Climate Partnership and the $100 million activity. We give away each year roughly somewhere between $120 and $150 million, all of that around two key areas of support, which is around the education and the environment. Those are the two key focuses. Now, the third part is where I focus most of my time and my teams, which is around our efficient operation of HSBC. So, in other words, making us more efficient. Because everywhere that we make us ourselves more efficient, we reduce our footprint on the planet. Now, that's the simple definition. Now, I'll tell you what our real, you know, our more detailed definition is for HSBC, sustainability means being in business for the long term, meeting the needs of present generations while investing in the infrastructure so that future generations can meet their needs. That is what we do in the area of sustainability. So, Nancy, I didn't take all of 15 minutes, but I think that kind of, you know, takes us to the point where, you know, we can talk a little bit or answer the questions and we can get into it. So that's kind of my background and what we're trying to do, and I'll be happy to go from there.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. That was very interesting. It's a great start. Thank you. So I would actually like to start with us elaborating a bit more on some of the earlier programs, in particular in 2007 when HSBC made the landmark commitment to climate change initiatives, right, to the climate partnership. The organization worked with the four NGOs, Earthwatch, the WWF, the Climate Group, and the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute, which you were a part of. To address the impact of climate change on people, rivers, cities, and forests worldwide. Since that initiative has since finished, could you share with us, one, could you elaborate more on what the climate change partnership was all about? What were, and could you share what were some of the success stories around the initiative?
And so I'll give you what. So the HSBC Climate Partnership, five-year, $100 million partnership with those people, I would say that the top-line achievement of that was, first off, we trained 2,200 climate champions. I'm one of those who come back into business who try to make a difference. Now, I'll tell you about – I'll also tell you the things that didn't work. But the thing that did work is HSBC sponsored and was responsible now for the largest single study of – climate change impact on forests ever done on this planet. You know, we spent many millions of dollars. We had five climate centers around the world where our people with Earthwatch, who is our engagement partner, went out into the forest and studied the impact of climate change on forests. And that data went into the largest database ever created around forests and climate change. That study continues today. I fund that in a number of locations around the world and as part of another program. So it didn't all stop in 2011 at the end. We donated over 85,000 plus hours of our staff time, which is more important than $100 million, to that program in order to study forests and impacts. So I think that was the top line success. And as a result of that, papers and studies are being written off of the data, and that continues today, that are informing local governments and local agencies about how to manage forests to the benefit of humans and the ecosystem of the planet, you know, in the face of rising CO2 numbers, right? You know, because we don't understand what is additional CO2 in the atmosphere going to do to our forest. And without the forest, we're screwed. Okay, so it's really important to us to understand what's going on, and we're still helping scientists understand that. So, Nancy, that was the top-line achievement of that. Trailing after that, actually before that, there was another program called Investing in Nature, which was a 5-year or $30 million program. So the HSBC Climate Partnership wasn't the first program. Investing in Nature was.
Got it. Okay. Well, some additional points to elaborate on that particular question. So how has the initiative in part changed the corporate culture and behavior, right? And if so, is there a particular metric in place that's measuring the success of that program?
Yeah, so let me answer the question. So let's talk about the things that don't work as well as we'd like, right? Because we're in a learning journey. First off, no one's ever created programs like this, so, you know, you don't do it perfectly the first time. I went on the pilot program, and the first thing I recognized is no senior managers from the company were there. They're not going to go away for 2 weeks in the woods. It's never going to happen. So what had happened was the company had created a program to train the troops, but no generals were coming. So what happens is these 2,200 people go back into the business, and they try to make change in that, and their managers look at them like they got their head screwed on backwards, right? Why are you doing that? You know, we don't do that. And so we created a new program called the Sustainability Leadership Program, which is running and continues to run today, which is the program that trains the generals. And since we've been doing that, training the senior managers, the most senior managers in the company, and by the way, we've trained 626 of them as of last week, we are changing the culture within the company because they're the people with the big budgets, the influence, and make the changes within the company. And we're the only company in the world that has a program like that, and it'll continue for at least 4 more years. So that program was a spin-off of the HSBC Climate Partnership and was a result of our looking at the first program and saying, it's a great program, but it doesn't help change the company enough. And so we created the Sustainability Leadership Program. The other program that spun off, the new 5-year, $100 million water program, which replaced the HSBC Climate Partnership Program, because we do these things in 5-year chunks, is trying to bring fresh water and clean water to many millions of people in our developing markets because our business understands that without fresh water, there is no economy. And so, you know, we are working with a number of other, you know, like WaterAid, World Wildlife Fund, and Earthwatch now to bring fresh water to many millions of people so that they can have a life. And so those are the key programs. The two programs that are underway right now, and I'll mention another one later that came after the HSBC Climate Partnership, are the Water Program and the Sustainability Leadership Program, which trains the generals of our company.
That's fascinating. Changing behavior is important for the long term, and it sounds like these programs are making significant progress in changing the company's behavior firm-wide. So I'd like to sort of elaborate a bit more on environmental efficiency, if we can. So HSBC has a 10-point plan to become a world leader in environmental efficiency by reducing its carbon emissions, right, developing new processes and technologies, and changing the way the organization works. So from what I've read, the company has stated that its goal is to reduce annual employee carbon emissions from 2.5 tons by 2020.
Right.
So
yeah.
How is it planning on achieving that efficiency goal? Could you tell us what environmental efficiency indices or green growth indicators the bank uses to measure these successes from an accounting point of view? And, of course, in your opinion, which steps are or will be the most challenging to implement?
Oh, that's a lot of questions. Well, let's start in how we measure, okay? We pull the public records of our competitors and other people, and we like our report, and we compare ourselves to them, and I'm looking at the 2012 report now. We get, on average, we use about 6 megawatts of energy per person per year. Depends on the region. You know, in Dubai, it's higher. In other places like Brazil, it's lower. But on average, about 6 megawatts. And we generate about 3.5 tons of CO2 per person per year, which is about equivalent to one round trip from London to Hong Kong and back on an airline. So to give you a sense of, you know, our air flight impact. And we compare that to our competitors like Santander, Standard Chartered, Barclays, RBS, Citibank, UBS, and we have the lowest carbon footprint of any of them already. So our reducing it by a third by 2020 is going to be very difficult to do. So it's an aspirational goal, and we're well on our way to doing that. We started that 10-point plan in 2012. Our carbon footprint right now is about 3.24. So we are on the road to meeting that. And so, you know, if you're one of the other leading international banks and your carbon footprint, and I won't mention their name, is at 7.5, it's a lot easier to reduce 1 ton per employee, okay? But if you're already the most efficient bank, as we are, it's much more difficult. So that's one of the things we're doing. I think, let me go back to your question. For us, you know, we're trying to do the right thing. What we're trying to do in the area of footprint management is to try to use less resources to do more work so that, you know, we can reduce our environmental footprint, which allows us to influence the business side, as I mentioned, our risk and investment area. You know, it allows us to keep our own house in order because there are many times in the risk and investment area where we'll talk to perhaps someone we're going to make a loan and say, I'm sorry, we can't make that loan to you because you don't have a sustainable plan around it. If we don't keep our own house in order and we aren't a leader in that, it's very hypocritical to say those things to someone and say, sorry, we're not going to give you the money because your baby's ugly when ours is as well. So we have to keep our own house in order for us to influence the business side. So, you know, that's our top line goal is reduced by one third. The way we're doing that is we're making the primary source of the carbon for us is either electricity or gas being used in our building or air travel. About one fifth of it is air travel, and about one sixth of it is air travel, and the other is basically due to energy used in our data centers and buildings. So we have many programs underway to put in new technologies and things within our buildings, LEED certification of buildings, for example, and I'll give you a couple of those, and in our data centers that allow us to be much more efficient users of energy. That has a direct correlation on our footprint. So maybe I will stop there, and maybe you could ask some additional questions around that, and I'll try to answer those.
Okay, so I think part of the question as well was on the environmental efficiency indices, right, or green growth indicators. I think what's very relevant to a number of us MBAers is identifying how do you measure these successes from an accounting point of view.
We do it two ways. One, we have scorecards around all of these 10 initiatives that you mentioned around energy, waste, CO2, data center efficiencies, travel, all of those. We have metrics around those that we report on an ongoing and in particular quarterly basis up to the senior management of the company on a steering committee that's chaired by the chief operating officer of the company, who is one of our sustainability leaders. So we report internally. Externally, different. You know, we pull the public records of our competitors and other best-in-class organizations and look at what their carbon footprint is to look for, you know, best-in-class opportunities, and I can give you some examples of that later in one of the other questions. As far as external measurements, we're not too thrilled about some of the external measurements because most of them are flawed. For example, we score very highly in the Carbon Disclosure Project. We score like 97 out of 100. We've been on it for 5 years. There was an administrative error on their part last year that dropped us from the index that, you know, they had fixed it, that we would have been on it for the last 5 years. The problem with that index is, for example, if you're like one of those other banks I mentioned who has a 7.5-ton carbon footprint and you reduce it by 1 ton, you get more points than like I do because I'm already at 3.2 because my change is smaller. That's a scoring problem. And we've talked to them about that, but they're too lazy to fix it. And so, you know, all of these systems have flaws in them. We recently won the top spot on the Hang Seng Index, which is where we traded. Of all companies, trade in Asia is the top sustainability company. So like it or not, those are two that we pay attention to, and my team's work to fill out all the paperwork. There are a couple of others, and, you know, depending on the, you know, how we fill out the paperwork, you score highly. What's interesting about some of those is we have intimate knowledge of some of the higher score companies on the, let's say, Carbon Disclosure Project, and we know from knowing about their internals that they are not that efficient because they just fill out the paperwork well. And so you got to be really careful when looking at those things. You got to get under the covers and look at them because, you know, sometimes it's just filling out the paperwork really well because they don't go back and assure these numbers, and that's a real problem. So I'll stop there and start preaching about indexes.
No, this is actually fantastic, and I'm sure that I'm not the only one who will appreciate your enthusiasm on it. So thank you for that. So, we agree. I think it's important for us to focus attention towards this new green growth accounting approach, right, in order for us to move business, especially the financial institutions, towards the longer-term view of sustainability.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very poignant point that you've made.
Well, to be fair, there are some of them we do subscribe to and we do pay attention to. They all have flaws, but they do have a place. I think it's like reading an article in the newspaper. That can't be your only source of input. You've got to look at how they're scoring and what they're doing to make sure you understand what the company's really doing. The second part of your question was, in your opinion, what steps are or will be the most challenging to implement as part of our 10-point strategy? If you look at the 10-point strategy, the number one goal on there is employee engagement. That is by far the absolute most difficult and most important thing we're doing. Because without engaging our staff, which includes the troops and the generals, sustainability is in just a hobby. And a lot of companies, it's a hobby because it's not being embedded into the DNA of the organization. And that is desperately what we're trying to do through our training classes, and it's working. But that is the number one challenge, is to get it into the heads of the employees so that it's second nature to them. And we have programs, and we can talk more about that as we go on, about, well, how are you doing that? But that is the most challenging and the most important thing we're doing.
Well, actually, that's fascinating to me, actually. How have you been able to successfully engage so many senior management, and what is the nature of the training that you do?
Well, we started small. When I took the job, I worked in IT, so I was actually a part of the business. So I have a lot of people I know and I can influence. So we developed the program with Earthwatch, you know, a program to train the generals. So it wasn't 2 weeks long. It was only 4 days long. So we can get people to go on a four-day thing. And so I went to, in the Americas, the chief operating officer of the Americas, who I knew very well, and I knew he cared about the environment, and said, look, we've developed this new program. Would you send 12 of your senior executives that to test drive? And he did. We got such a resounding positive response from that it's been upward ever since. Every single person who's gone through that program of the 626 has come back and said, that's the best program we've ever been on. And the reason is not because we designed a great program. It's because people want to help with this problem. And so how the program works is we take our senior executives to various places around the world on Earthwatch expeditions where during the day they're assisting Earthwatch scientists in the study of either forest or like last 2 weeks, I was in Mexico in communities building sustainable stoves and cisterns, trap water, and gardens. So we take them to a number of places around the world, and during the day, they participate as part of what we call citizen science. And taking them out of the office opens their mind. And then in the evening, we teach them about sustainability back at HSBC. And so putting them in that new framework, that new paradigm, is what opens their mind up to the change. And so it started with one successful class, and the word spread, and now we did last year, or this year, I just finished one last week, the final one for the year, we did 22, okay? And we've had 626 leaders in 4 years go through this program, and they are our most senior people in the company. And we're absolutely certain that we have trained our future CEO in that group, because we know who's on the list of people who potentially will be our CEO in the future, and we've trained them all.
So
that's how we're embedding it.
Nancy, I'm apologizing for jumping in here because I'm just fascinated by this. So I'll let you get back to the students in a minute. But so you said sustainability for you is about sustaining the mission, sustaining the company for 150 years. So that's where you start with these executives. But there must be some social and environmental content to the sustainability training.
Yeah, well, there is, obviously. I mean, obviously you're going out and you're helping a community, or you're helping the scientists who are studying climate change impact on forests, or like in Arizona, we're capturing caterpillars because they're the canary in the cave, and helping scientists understand what's happening to that species and how they're disappearing. Whatever it is that they do in these, and I sent Nancy a copy of the booklet we recently wrote about the first 3.5 years of the program, that is the social context of it. But we teach them about why is sustainability and why is climate change important to our business and the future of our business, because they are the leaders who will lead our business. Once they see the data, like I saw when I went through the first climate champion training, their eyes are opened up, because most of those people don't know a damn thing about sustainability or climate change. What they know is what they read in the paper, which is 99 out of 100 times junk, you know, or crap, you know. I mean, it's wrong. Or slanted to some various newspaper's opinion about it. Once they see the data, you know, from the IPCC report and from our scientists from Earthwatch, they go, oh, my God, this is a real problem. We've got to do something about that. And HSBC, being one of the largest lenders on the planet and one of the largest investors and one of the largest companies, these people go back and they've got big levers they can pull. And I'll give you an example of that in a few minutes. That's how we do it. That we open them up to the data. We don't preach at them. We say, here's what's happening to your planet, your home, and your kids. What are you going to do about it? And they go back and they start doing something about it. And that's how we've been successful. And we have reached critical mass with that team. We're seeing now things that I couldn't possibly have gotten the company to do a few years ago are happening now by these people coming back and changing our business.
Okay.
How's that?
Even was that a thorough?
Right. I'm gonna shut up now. I overstepped my bounds here. So.
No, I thought those were good questions, because that is the heart of our plan: is to train our people so that they know what to do and know why it's important. It's not just about HSBC. HSBC isn't doing business on Mars. It's doing business on planet Earth. And if we screw it up, that's going to hurt our business significantly, and it will in the future, because we're going to run out of resources. Our economy, the way it's set up today, can't survive the next 100 years. And HSBC's got to be prepared for that, or we're going to go out of business. I mean, you know, who thought Lehman Brothers would have disappeared off the map so quickly? Just being big like HSBC don't mean you're going to survive. So it's imperative to our survival that we understand what's going on the planet and do something about it. And our senior leaders are.
Well, Bill, you're
the founding. The thing about HSBC is so frustrating is we're lousy at telling the story. Absolutely terrible. They've been doing this stuff for years and they haven't told anybody about it. It's horrible. The only thing anybody ever hears about us is the consent decree that happened, like in the U.S., where we got fined $2 billion, right? I mean, you know, there are lots of things our company does to try to make the, you know, to try to help, you know, people on the planet, to try to be good stewards, but we just don't tell anybody. It's not in our culture to do that.
Well, for the sake of a time check here, we're at 12:30, and we still have a series of other questions for you, Bill. So
okay.
This is sort of springboard of the notion of sustainability risk that you were just referring to.
Yeah.
HSBC must anticipate and deal with these potential social and environmental risks that may arise through your lending and investment practices.
Yep.
And we know that the bank has developed a series of risk policies for sensitive sectors, that includes chemical, defense, equipment,
yep.
energy,
yes.
mining, and metals, freshwater infrastructure, and forest land and forest products. So on Monday, there was an article in The Guardian News that accused HSBC as being one of the three worst lenders to the coal industry, in spite of the fact that it's also one of the banks that helped draw up the Equator Principles, which requires companies to take environmental risk and social issues into account in their lending practices. So
yep.
Could you discuss with us what HSBC's policies are for lending? What are the criteria that it uses in analyzing these lending requests, and how strictly are they monitored, and how do they enforce their own policies?
Yeah, so I can't, you know, in 30 minutes we can't tell you all HSBC lending policies, so let's start at the very top line. Back around 2004, 2005, HSBC was one of the original developers of what are called the Equator Principles. Are you guys familiar with those? There are about 80 large banks now belong to that organization, and it has a set of lending policies that try to make sure that when financial organizations lend money to companies to do business, that, you know, they follow sustainable practices in running their business, okay? For example, we don't want to lend money to an Indonesian logging company who's tearing down the rainforest to build palm oil plantations. That just doesn't fit with our ethics within the company. And so these principles are adhered to in our regions and our global offices to make sure that if we're lending or investing money, it's done so in a sustainable way. Now, having said that, and I deal with that group who does that for a living, there are still, it's very, very difficult sometimes to, you know, track the money all the way to the end source to make sure that somebody's doing that. So we don't. We hire someone to do that. PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and I'll give you the current statistics, goes out every year, and we pay a lot of money for this, quite a lot of money, goes out and assures, you know, our lending in that space, you know, the ones that you mentioned. You know, I'll give you the current statistics if I can get to it here in a minute. So we actually have an outside organization do that because it doesn't make sense for us to assure it ourselves. And so let me find it here. I have to get the right numbers up. Sorry, this will take just a second.
But is that the case, Bill, because an organization like PwC would be far more abreast of the actual policies and regulations as opposed to someone internal
yeah.
within HSBC to
yeah,
do that?
So let me tell you what our current compliance numbers are, and these are public record, but we're very transparent about it. This is between 2011 and 2012. So, you know, give or take roughly 31,000 commercial customers doing $600 billion in exposure to this area that you mentioned, right? You know, basically 96.1% of those customers are compliant with not only the Equator Principles, but our enhanced principles around sustainable lending. Now, 2.1% of those clients have better policies than we do. Now, we have about 1.7 are near compliant and 0.1 non-compliant. Generally, those are customers. The near compliant or non-compliant ones are the ones that are either companies we bought someone's loan portfolio, or we've raised the standards and they're now catching up. And we give our customers time to do that, and we work with them. But if they don't live up to those standards within a certain period of time, we actually exit the relationship with those customers. And I do get involved in some of those decisions to do that, and we do it on a regular basis. So now, are we perfect? Absolutely not. No one in this space is, okay? With 31,000 customers and $600 billion of exposure, we're doing our absolute best to make sure that our money goes to a place where, you know, it's being spent properly and not being spent to, you know, tear down the rainforest or whatever. Now, you mentioned coal, okay? The big problem around coal, one is, the way it's being dug up, and two, people are burning it and putting it into the atmosphere, right? So while I agree that I don't like fossil fuel burning very much, the fact is 90-plus percent of all our energy, including the energy you use in your home, is being generated that way. So it's hypocritical of people like in The Guardian to say, oh, God damn it, the bank shouldn't be lending money to those people, while they go home and turn the lights on and find out that, you know, most of it's coming from fossil fuel. So what we try to do with, including the coal companies, and I'll give you an example of one of the things we've done with some, is we try to teach them how to do that business in a sustainable way without tearing up the environment. And there are ways of doing that if you're willing to spend the money. Now, some coal companies aren't, in which case we try to exit those relationships, and some are. Recently, for example, we made low-interest loans available to coal companies to replace their equipment with more efficient equipment that doesn't pollute, okay? And a lot of them are taking advantage of that. But, yes, we do lend money to coal companies and oil companies because it is part of our business. We are trying to influence them to be more sustainable. Our theory is we have much more leverage if we try to influence our customers to be sustainable than to just look at them and say, I'm sorry, we're just going to walk away from you. And I'll give you an example of one recent success. One of the largest logging companies in Indonesia we lend money to, along with the World Bank, Citibank, and others, and they were found to be logging unsustainably, right? So everybody but HSBC walked away from that company and said, sorry, we don't want to lend you money anymore. We didn't. We work with that company, and now they're FSC certified. And they're the second largest logging company in the world now, and they're FSC certified. They could have very easily gone to someone in Asia and gotten money from another financial organization who has no standards, and there's still a lot of them out there who don't care about sustainability. But we didn't do that. We work with them to make them a more sustainable company and showed them that being FSC certified opens up markets to them where they can sell their products in places they couldn't before, and they're now making more money logging in a sustainable way from sustainable forests than they were before. So, yes, we do lend money to companies like coal companies, but we try to do it in a sustainable way. But again, I'll say at the end, we are absolutely not perfect. If any of you have seen a very funny video that Bill Odie, if you want to go on YouTube and look at Bill Odie and HSBC, and you're going to see a very humorous video that was done recently in the lobby of our headquarters and about our supporting palm oil plantations. As a result of that video coming out, which is, by the way, inaccurate but humorous, we've actually brought in another outside agency to recertify all of our logging and palm oil plantations to make sure that they're being done sustainably. So, Mike, Nancy, what we're trying to do is do the best we can to make sure our money's being spent in the right place. But, again, we aren't perfect.
Well, yeah. Can I follow up on that one? Because, I mean, thinking about coal as a financially responsible investment is an interesting question, right?
Yep.
I mean, let alone an environmentally sustainable investment. So as kind of the stranded asset piece of this begins to become more and more real and thinking about, well, if we really are going to, you know, hold the planet to some reasonable degree of well, not reasonable, as good as we can get, a lot of those fossil fuel assets are gonna wind up getting stranded. So how does one calculate that into the bank's sort of,
you know, if we stranded all of those assets for the bank, it wouldn't make that much difference to our bottom line, okay? I mean, if you look at, I can't tell you what the number is, it's confidential, but if actually, and we do that, if you look at coal, our fossil fuel money made from companies that are fossil fuel, that's not where we're making big money, okay? I mean, it's a lot of money when you know, compared to what Bill has in his bank account, but it's not, we wouldn't, it would hurt for a while, but not that long. So, yeah, absolutely. Do I want us to get off of the relationship with, let's say, one of the oil companies? Damn right. Are we yet? No. But we are trying to work with them to be more sustainable. So, I mean, I have my own personal opinion about it. I want everybody to stop burning fossil fuels. I mean, I'm about to – tomorrow I've got a guy coming out, and I'm going to put solar cells on my house and take my house off the grid. That's the only place it can start. But, you know, the bank is still investing and still has customers who bank with us who are in the fossil fuel business. If they all went away, it wouldn't difference difference to the bank. And more the bank is looking at them with a very critical eye to say,
yeah.
you know, the brand risk associated with these people, do we really need that? And so more and more that's something that's being looked at because that's not where we make our big money. And it actually, it doesn't matter even if you did. At some point, banks are going to go, okay, enough of that. We just can't do it because governments aren't doing it. So somebody's got to take those steps forward. And I won't mention their name, but one of those oil companies recently came to us and said, would you help us write our sustainability plan? Because they know we're good at it. And that was at least a light at the end of the tunnel for me to say, oh, at least they're paying attention or starting to ask the questions. But, yeah, we still lend money to them, and I don't like it. But when we do lend it, we try to do it in a sustainable way. But it's a difficult dilemma for those of us in sustainability when you realize that, you know, fossil fuels is what's causing a problem.
Bill?
Yes.
So just to wrap that last question up, I guess we can all agree that it's important for us to understand the framework
yeah.
by which banks measure environmental and social issues when it comes to project financing. So your very candid answer is very much appreciated. Before I turn it over to Jessica, who has a series of questions as well, I wanted to ask you just one more quick question, although it may not be quick. But HSBC is listed as one of the 85 companies from around the world who participates in the IIRC pilot program business network that was launched
yeah.
In October of 2011. It
right.
builds a framework of integrated reporting. And there is some concern again amongst sustainability professionals about the impact integrated reporting will have on sustainability reporting and the important work of embedding sustainability into organizational strategy and practices. So as,
yep.
as head of sustainability for the technology services, what is your stance on integrated reporting? And but of course, let's just before we address that, let's just bear in mind that integrated thinking is a precursor to a successful integrated reporting. So what is HSBC's business case on integrated thinking?
Well, I don't know. What does integrated reporting mean? Tell me what that means. I mean, you know, governments are telling us that we have to report our sustainability activities in our annual report now. That's happening. But it hasn't changed the way we're looking at sustainability. We will continue to produce a separate, standalone, transparent, very clear sustainability report because we think it's very important. So the fact that either governments or some organizations are looking to try, and I think what they're trying to do is to try to embed sustainability into the DNA of the organization. I personally think it's a poor way of doing it, but okay, that's just me. But so it's not changing any behavior at HSBC at this point, right? We are so far ahead of the reporting requirements coming out in that project or in that the government is putting on us through the carbon reduction thing that we talked about yesterday, that, you know, it's just sort of an, you know, actually it's an administrative headache for us, but we go through it. Our sustainability reporting, the standalone reporting, and what we're doing to collect data on what we do and what we report about the activities of our company is far more detailed than anyone's asking us to do. And we assure it. We have PwC assure every single number in that report. Which a lot of companies don't. So we're going to continue to lead in that space, and I don't really care too much about these integrated reporting activities. To me, they're just administrative headaches that I have to have my team work on. So I guess I'm agreeing with you. I think it diverts attention in the wrong way. I think you've got to separate it and show it so that people can be aware of it. If you bury it underneath a bunch of numbers in various other reports, it loses its impact, and we believe that, and we're not going to do it. We may have to do it because the government tells us to, but we're still going to separate our sustainability reporting.
Yeah, I think one of the key things that I've discovered from researching that is that it makes good business sense to integrate the integrated thinking process because it helps embed sustainability into decisions that are being made strategically.
Yeah, we think so too, but basically, our training of our senior leaders who are the money lenders and own all the big budgets are the ones that's making a difference for us. So it isn't driven by a reporting requirement. If you look at the Dunphy model and you look at that, that's just down in the compliance area. We're way past that, okay? you know, people that are worried about that are still way down on the chart down in. Are you familiar with that model?
No, not yet.
Okay. So you guys ought to look at that because it shows the journey of organizations and where they are in their sustainability journey. And you should look at that because basically that's down in the area of, you know, that's way down there in the area of compliance, right? It's not integrated into your, you know, into the, you know, it basically goes through the four, six steps are rejection, non-responsive, compliant, efficiency, built into the DNA or a sustainable corporation. Well, that's way down. That's in the compliance area. We're well above that. And so, to me, it's just administrative headache that people are putting on us, and we're well past that in our reporting. So so I'm agreeing with you. Violent.
Bill, to follow up on that one, are you finding, and Jessica, I apologize for jumping in, are you finding that you're, you know, that there's sort of sustainability innovation that's driving top-line growth at all, HSBC? That's sort of the holy grail.
Well, right? Yes. So we didn't talk about this. I make no bones about this. One of the reasons we're interested in sustainability is we make a lot of money at that because we're one of the world's largest investors in energy efficiency and renewable energy, low-carbon energy technologies. So we are a major lender in what is right now about a $500-plus billion market, and we estimate by 2020 will be a $2.2 trillion market. That's growing at about 30% a year. Right now, today, that market is bigger than aerospace, and we're a big player in that. So it's one of those rare times where our business and helping the environment line up directly. You know, we invest in renewable electricity, biofuels, transport efficiency, building efficiency, industry efficiency sectors of the market, and we have a whole committee that does nothing but investigate that area. And because we make money at it. So, you know, it's a good business to be in.
Okay, with that, I'm going to turn this over to Jessica, who's got some questions, and we'll also open it up.
Okay.
Hey, Bill.
Hi.
So I have one question for you before I open it up to our audience. Okay. And I think this can be tied back to the 10-point plan you were talking about in the second question, where you mentioned that employee engagement is absolutely imperative to things like this. So in 2011, you were featured in an article on businessgreen.com titled HSBC Hails Sustainability Bonus Success Story. And in this article, it highlighted how the bank tied 16 green measures of sustainability into bonus payments that helped cut waste, water, and electricity usage.
Yep.
And I'm hoping you could elaborate a little bit more on this initiative.
Okay. So, you know, what gets measured gets managed. So our regional chief operating officers, so we have them in all of the regions and then one at group, the guy I work for, Sean O'Sullivan, have measures in their scorecard about meeting our sustainability objectives around things like waste, energy, travel, paper, those kind of things, and engagement, you know, participating in the engagement program. And if they don't meet those objectives at the end of the year, they lose money. And we thought that would make a big difference. And it does. It gets it on the radar. And we've been doing that now for, 4 or 5 years, for quite a long time. But what we found, that isn't what drives it. What they are is very competitive. So the guy who's the chief operating officer of the Americas isn't happy when his numbers are red and the guy in Asia is green. It's the competition that drove the change. It wasn't the money. These guys make enough money. You know, it wasn't the money. It was an unintended outcome we didn't expect. It turned out it wasn't the money. It was the competition of us, you know, publishing these reports on a quarterly basis and the guy in the Americas going, hey, damn it, you know, my energy numbers don't look right. You guys, and telling his team, you better do something about that because he's embarrassed to go to the meetings and have to report when the global chief operating officer goes, hey, what's the problem over there in the U.S.? Fix that. So it turned out that the publishing the scorecards and the KPIs was what really made the difference. It wasn't the money. It was like, I don't like being in the red. And the other thing that helps, Jennifer, is it Jennifer, I think?
Jessica.
Jessica. was the fact that we've trained all these people in our SLP program. We've specifically targeted them. All the chief operating officers are now sustainability leaders. They get it. We don't have to chase them on these things. They're doing it because they care about their families and their kids and the planet. And so they're chasing them now on their own. I don't have to chase after them. Our big problem is now we can't keep up with them, right, on all the things they're doing. And
so, which is a good issue to have.
It's a great problem to have. You know, Sean says, well, tell me all the things we're working on. It's like, oh, are you insane? How can I do that? You know, we're embedded in the DNA. I'll give you an example. We recently signed the largest facility management contract on the planet with Joan Lang LaSalle to manage all of our buildings worldwide. Embedded in that RFP and in the contract from the very beginning were all of our 10-point sustainability strategies, and there are incentives and penalties in there for JLL. If they don't, we don't meet our energy and our efficiency and our green building and our waste and our engagement numbers, they pay money. If they exceed the goal, we gain share with them. That was built into that contract by sustainability leaders that we've trained. And that's a great example of not adding something separate that they have to do, but it giving them a different lens to look through. That's now the largest facility management contract on the planet, $3.5 billion, and sustainability is built in throughout the contract. That is a more elegant solution than trying to do it afterwards. And that's a good example of the leadership making a difference.
That's great. That competition really does work, I guess. And you actually answered the second half, which was, did it work? Have you seen permanent change in behavior? Which it,
no
it
question
seems like
about that. Absolutely we have. We see it all the time. You know, you can't drive this from the top down. It has to be an internal, external, driven by the hearts and minds of the people that do our business. And our training, 626 of the most senior people in our organization, is changing the face of HSBC.
Mm-hmm. So now we're kind of pressed for time. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. So I'm going to open it to our national audience for questions. Eben, can you refresh us on the directions for unmuting?
Yeah, if you'd like to ask Bill a question, you need to hit 5-star on your phone, 5-star, and that will enable you up here to talk. I just want to let people know, December 6th, Friday, we have Amy Hall, who is Director of Social Consciousness at Eileen Fisher, will be on the call. So looking forward to rounding out the semester with that conversation. So again, 5-star on your phone will enable you to ask one of the final questions. While we're waiting for that, just to follow up, Bill, on that question about whether all this sustainability training is generating a sort of a new way of seeing kind of top-line opportunities and lending opportunities that you might not have otherwise seen. So you talked about HSBC's involvement in the renewable energy space. Do you think you're better at that now because these people have gone through this training and they're sort of more aware of the opportunities?
Definitely we are.
People?
Yeah, we clearly are. In fact, we're seeing many, many sustainability leaders going back and changing the way their business operates. I just gave you one about the corporate real estate guys head guy of corporate real estate is one of the trained people. When that new contract came up, said sustainability's got to be at the heart of the contract, whereas 5 years ago, they couldn't spell sustainability.
And that wasn't you. That was someone who'd been through your training.
I did not do that. That was done without us. That was something a couple of years ago we could have never made happen. And that's why it's so powerful, is that they're doing it on their own. If I had come to them a couple of years ago and said, oh, you've got to change your contracts, they'd have said, get lost. You know, we're busy. Now they're doing it on their own. Now, that's the only way to get it into their DNA. You've got to train them, and you've got to show them why it's important.
Okay, we got 717-534-1621.
Yes, good afternoon, Bill. This is Juza Rangunwala. I'm one of the MBA students with Jessica and Nancy. And just listening to your definition of sustainability and all the programs at HSBC, you know, the first question that went through my mind is, are you hiring and where can I apply? But
pick a number.
The other thing that I was just curious about is, you know, coming from an IT background, which Nancy and I also share, do you see a difference in leadership styles, either yours or around you, just going from an IT organization into this field of sustainability?
Well, I'll just speak for myself. Actually, you know, the skills in that I picked up with 40-plus years in IT really have helped me quite a bit in the sustainability area because, you know, you have to be very good at managing details and managing projects and influencing people and getting people to do things who may or may not report directly to you. I found those skills that I learned in IT, the analytic skills, the project management skills, the influencing skills, to be very relevant and very useful when I switched careers from IT to sustainability. Also, was very important were the connections I had made with people. They gave me a foot of bootstrapped in order to get started. Like the first sustainability program that we ran, you know, I went to the chief operating officer who I knew from my IT days and said, can we test drive it on your team? It was having that relationship made a difference. So, no, I think the skills that you pick up in those in other areas are very relevant and very useful in the area of sustainability.
Actually, guys, if I may interject, Bill, we had a specific question for you that related to the partners, other sort of third-party companies that you engage with. And there's an engagement model that you have with HP. And for Juicer's benefit, Juicer works at HP. And could you share with us, I know that there is some effort that they've had in helping you with efficiency.
Yeah, so it gets back to the Sustainability Leadership Program. We don't just allow people from internally to go on the SLP. We've also invited our supply chain partners to go with us on SLP. John Fry, who's the head of sustainability for HP in the Americas, has been on 5 SLP woods with us, helping us. He could train our people. He is a sustainability leader. So we've taken along all of our top supply chain partners on the SLP to teach them about what sustainability means to HSBC and to partner in a stronger way with them. So HP is just one of them. Joan Lang's LaSalle, IBM, Cisco, SAP, you know, British Telecom, they've all been on our program. They are our top supply chain partners. They've all come on that program and been trained by us. If you have a supply chain partner and you buy from them, you've got to make sure that they live up to your brand values or you shouldn't be buying from them. This is one way we're doing that in order to be more sustainable. And we talk to our vendors, and we've walked away from vendors that we don't think have a sustainable plan. For example, we just quit on a carpet vendor recently because they don't have a sustainability plan. We said we won't buy from you.
Well, we certainly know what carpet manufacturer you should go to.
Well, we buy from Interface.
Oh, very good, yes.
Because we think they have the best plan. But we recently had a carpet manufacturer show up and say, we can save you 35% on all your carpet. We said, normally in the old days, we'd say, fine, let's buy. And our sustainability looked at it and said, what's your sustainability plan? How's the carpet made and how's it recycled? And they said, we don't do that. And they went, get lost. Come back when you do.
That's a great way to end. I'm afraid we're at the top of the hour.
I really enjoyed talking to you guys. I wish I could spend more time with you.
Any last thoughts for us, Bill, on your way out?
Yeah. If one of your guys, MBA students, wants to go on one of our SLP programs, let me know so they can see it from the inside out and bring it back to your MBA program. I'll make that offer to you now. We'll make one spot available to them. Nancy can coordinate it, and they can come along on the program and see what it looks like, so that you can come back and say, we are not making this up. There's no bullshit here. We're actually doing it.
I am sure you will get they'll be fighting to get that spot. So thank you so much.
Take me up on it.
Good, we
will. Thank you so much for your time. This was exceptional.
You're welcome. Glad to be there.
Six with Amy Hall from Eileen Fisher. Bill Thomas, thanks again. Look forward to further conversations.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.